My name is Kent Bai, and I host the Voices of VR podcast. And back in July of 2015, I quit my job to do this full time. I just love doing it. But I do need your support to help continue this podcast. I've got lots of great insights from GDC and a lot of other conferences that I want to travel to and kind of be the proxy of the virtual reality community. So if you do enjoy this podcast, then please do consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/voicesofvr.
The Voices of VR Podcast.
I'm Andy Tude. I'm the creative director at Slightly Mad Studios. And yeah, we're here at the Oculus Rift Game Day to announce that Project Cars is going to be a key launch title there on day one, March 28th, on the Oculus Store.
I'm Stephen Fulyun. I'm game director on Project Cars franchise. And very excited to be in showing what we're doing in VR, just staying ahead of the curve where everybody else is as far as the racing genre go and getting people in a game in a way that just simply wasn't possible before.
Yeah, so maybe you could give me a little bit of background in terms of, you know, where this game was coming from and the decision to add VR to it.
Yeah, so we've got a long history of making racing games in our studio. We've been making racing games for over 10 years. Back in the day with GTR, GTR 2, GT Legends, we're most known for Need for Speed and Need for Speed Shift and Shift 2 Unleashed. And in 2011, we just wanted to do our own thing. We wanted to make our own game, start our own franchise, our own IP. So we looked directly to the gamers to do that. So we wholly crowdfunded the title. Over 30,000 people helped us make this game. We raised $3.2 million. And what we said was that if you help us make this game, we will pay you back depending on the success of the game. So it was one of the first titles out there, still is one of the first titles out there, which is a truly AAA crowdfunded title that is a box product on a shelf that you can actually buy. You know, and this was long before Kickstarter became so infamous with that kind of stuff now. And still to this day, we're one of the only games where people could talk to us on a daily basis. So even on Kickstarter, if I look on the projects that I'm backing myself, I get a monthly report maybe. It was totally different on ours. On ours, you could actually talk to us day by day on a forum system. You could vote on key decisions. You could play the game every day, every week, every month. You could give us feedback on things. People going out to tracks, taking reference photos for us, getting access to cars that we didn't have access to ourselves, taking photos and things like that there, giving us feedback on what they wanted to see in the game, telling us how bad the game was and where we needed to improve over the years and things like that. And then we released in May 2015, last year, with our fingers crossed that what the community had kind of molded with us was going to be an epic game. We felt the risks were minimal because, as I said, we've had the community following us and helping us make this game the entire time. So we hoped that what we'd made was pretty cool. And yeah, we released in May and it received critical acclaim, the highest rated racing game on PlayStation 4, sold incredibly well worldwide. And ever since, we've been supporting the game with brand new content, 12K support. Here we are today with VR. We're the most successful racing esport out there. And yeah, now Oculus Rift adds a kind of final piece of the puzzle.
And so what makes a good racing game?
So inside the subgenre of racing games, you have various subgenres. Of course, you have like your arcade-style games. We've always gone for the authentic driving simulator experience. And where we differ from games like Gran Turismo and Forza and so on is where they're mostly focused on car collecting and grinding away through that. We're simulating the experience of being a motorsport driver. So we believe that a good racing game is when you can put somebody in a car and give them an authentic experience, because driving is something that most people do in real life, so they already have that association with roughly what it should feel like, what it should look like, which is now very important in VR, of course, because where previously we didn't have to worry about things like scale, because the size of the car would change depending on the size of your TV. So now in VR, the scale is absolutely critical. You need to make sure that when you're in the car, sat in the car, it looks like what you would expect it to look size-wise, perspective, and the way that it reacts to your head movement and so forth, that all of that is there and accurate. So all of these things contribute in VR to make a great racing experience when you get it right. When you don't, then it just all breaks down, because again, people can immediately recognize when things aren't right because they know from real world experience. We've gone for an authentic racing experience right from the beginning, in a sense of that we model the physics of the cars and the tires and the way that it looks, the way that it sounds and all that accurately. But we also do an holistic approach where everything is accurately modeled. The tracks are accurately modeled down to the bumps on the road surface. We model atmospheric temperature. And that's not just saying, well, you know, it's 22 degrees outside. That actually affects the track surface temperature, which affects your grip. It affects the pressure inside the tires, which also affects their wear rate, for example, on the tires. We do a simulation of full 24-hour day-night cycle, so you can have a full endurance race where you start off like midday and play through the night and through the other one. You can scale that, so you can do it all, have that same experience, but have it in 2 hours. We have a fully dynamic weather system. So you can, for example, start off in like slightly cloudy, it gets clear, but then the clouds start rolling back and starts raining, and that changes again and so forth throughout the course of the race. So bringing all of those pieces together allow us to let the player have a fully authentic racing experience, because a real world race driver has to deal with all of those things when he's out there on the racetrack. And now with VR, we can put you in a situation where you feel like you're wearing a race helmet. You have the same sort of slightly restricted field of view as what you would do if you were wearing a race helmet. And then you find yourself suddenly in the cockpit of the car. So you have that full situational awareness that is so critical to a real-world race driver, where he can very quickly glance in the mirrors, find his apex when he enters a corner. As he hits the apex, find his exit point on the opposite side of the road, and then find his line nicely. Check exactly where the opponents are, and all of this together, we believe, just puts Project Cars in a league above anything else out there right now.
And so will there be multiplayer support for Project Cars?
Yes, absolutely. So we have like 16-player support already now in Oculus. From day one, you'd be able to play it all in VR. You'd be able to matchmake with buddies who aren't playing in VR at that time. So full multiplayer support, and if you don't have enough buddies around and you want to have a full field experience, you can actually have the rest of the field, for example, filled up with AI opponents, so you can have a combination of, you know, human players and AI players as well.
So how many different tracks are there in Project Cars?
So Project Cars has got the largest track roster of any game. So it's got 35 unique locations, so 35 specific places from around the world, and 110 layouts of those different things as well. So traditionally, like, we would never talk about numbers. You know, you never talk about how many guns there are in Call of Duty or how many tanks there are in World of Tanks or something like that. But, you know, it is important, I guess, to start talking about those kind of things because they are unique experiences. Like, you can pick any car and go into any track, and you spend a good few hours, like, trying to master a track, you know, or even longer if it's something like the Nordschleife or something like that. So, there's a lot of content in there when you talk about career mode and multiplayer and the actual number of cars in there, number of tracks and stuff like that, and the variety of motorsports, everything from Indie cars, the stock cars, the touring cars, the GT cars, the open wheel cars, the track day cars, the road cars, to karts. Like, how many is that? Like 7, 8 different disciplines right there already. So there's a lot of stuff in there.
So are you modeling the weight of the cars as well, so that as you are going through the different tracks, they would behave differently on the track?
Yeah, I'll take this one. So I always like breaking down the fourth wall for this stuff. So yeah, like, I hope that one day journalists will never ask me this question in future, because I think it's important for everyone out there to realize that we do things properly. Yeah. So it's a silly question. So like, do we model the weight? I'm not saying you are silly for asking it, but it's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, there's no area of leeway at all. We have to get the references from the car manufacturers. We have to make them absolutely perfect, because ultimately they have to approve it as well. We get the technical data from the car manufacturers as well. We take millions of photos and things like that. Where possible, we go and actually sit in the cars and, you know, especially for VR, check the actual scale of things is correct. We attach cameras and microphones to the cars to get the actual audio, noise and things like that too. So, yeah, like, in the future, like, I hope, you know, people will realize that, yeah, it's just a one-to-one recreation. You know, we've got the Pagani Huayra BC, which we announced recently for the Game of the Year edition version of the game. And we've got a long-standing history with Pagani that they're only making 20 of those, so only 20 people will ever get to drive that in real life, but yet millions of people will get to drive it in the game. And therefore, especially with VR, like, you want to make sure that in VR you can sit there and experience exactly how that car looks like in real life, because one day Mr. Horatio Pagani himself will want to sit there in VR, and also he'll be able to tell us whether the stitching is wrong or whether the carbon fiber on the interior or something like that is wrong. He will know, right? And therefore we want that level of authenticity that the digital craftsmanship that goes into making these things is exactly the same as the real world craftsmanship.
What are some of the questions that you never get asked but you always want to talk about?
Well, there are a lot of little things like that, and interestingly enough, it's the sort of stuff like when you do it right, people don't notice, because they expect that's how the world works. It's when it doesn't work right that it stands out. So there are many, many things. Some of the stuff I've spoken about now previously, like, you know, the ambient temperature affecting your car handling, or the way that the rain has an effect on the road surface, which when it does work right, people just go, yeah, well, that's how I would experience it in real life. When it doesn't work right, people are quick to point it out. So yes, in so many areas, like for example, with the damage, we've modeled detail under the surface that a lot of people won't ever notice, because you only see it if you break off panels and you take the time to go notice it. But we wanted to make sure that it's there and it's authentic. It's accurate to what the car looks like in real life. The same with the way that the tire physics work, and the way that contact patches and the scrubbing and the amount of resistance change depending on what type of surface you're driving on. Little details like that that is just not noticed because it works. But it's very satisfying, you know. It's sort of like we know it's in there and we know it's working, and we're happy because people aren't crying out about it because it's just right.
I'm going to say, I think I'm most proud of the feedback loop that we're getting now. So if you think of where racing games used to come from like OutRun and Ridge Racer and things like that, like now we've got a feedback loop where a kid plays the game, my nephew, my niece, whatever, they get really good at the game. They then decide to spend some money and get a wheel. They get even better at the game. On the other side, ourselves, we've got our own expertise and heritage of making racing games and stuff like that. We've got the real drivers who have been helping us as well. We've now got young drivers who don't get a chance to actually go to some of these tracks using Project Cars as a training tool for them, you know, in their early careers that they're starting. We've got veteran and pro racers who are using the game not just for fun, but also to practice for their real-life events that are happening. They helped us make the game. And as I said, on the other side, you've got these guys who are taking it to the pro level, like some of our eSport guys, as you know, as well. And they're comparable with the real racing drivers now. And, you know, you could put them in a race together and they'd be very similar. So we've got this real kind of mixing pot of young people, old people, veterans, newcomers, all playing the game and all managing to have a great time with it and finding their level of skill and competition within the game. And yeah, kind of like the sky's the limit now.
So because you're trying to simulate a process of racing a game, there's a lot of strategic decisions that you have to make over the course of an entire race that, you know, if you're doing just a few laps, you may not have to make those same type of decisions. So maybe you could talk a bit about the strategies and decisions that you have in terms of the gameplay of the game.
Sure. Being a motorsport simulator, we have multi-class races, or we have class races where not everybody are in identical cars. For example, you may have a GT3 field where you have 9 or 10 different car models. Now, each one of those types of cars have different behavioral aspects. For example, the one might be lighter on fuel, the other one might be better on, by default, faster straight, but doesn't have quite the handling of the other one. The other one might be heavier on its tire. So first of all, when you go into, like, for example, a 3-hour race, you want to consider those things in how it's going to play off in your strategy. Then what you can do in Project Cars, for example, you go into the pits and you'd pre-configure things. You would say, okay, I'm going to start off with half a fuel tank because I know I'm going to need to change tires during the race. My tires are not going to last. So I'm going to start off with half a fuel tank and then come in about maybe 2/3 through the race, get a fresh set of tires and have that final advantage, you know, being on fresh tires and only have like half a fuel load in my tank. You may go and say, well, you know, I'm going to pick this car because it's lighter on fuel, so I may go get away with only a single fuel tank. So I start off with a heavier fuel tank, but I'm still going to need to change tires. It still means my pit stop's going to be quicker. But initially, I'm going to be heavier on fuel, but at the end, I'm going to have the lightest amount of fuel. So it all plays into the strategy. And then, of course, there's a dynamic weather system. So you don't know. It may start raining halfway through the race, which throws all of that out the window. Or there may be a major incident, and it blocks all the people up. And now you've had an advantage of 10 seconds because you started off on the light fuel load, and now the whole field is right here with you again. We do all of that in Project Cars. You don't have to experience that, because what we do is we allow you to scale the length of the races so you can have a race that, when you're playing in career mode, for example, you can go say, each round of this championship, I only want to be 5 laps. But if you wanted to, you can set it to full duration, so it will be a proper hour and a half race, everyone. So the strategy is there and it works properly just like it does in real life. But you don't have to do that if you don't want to. It's there for those people who do want to experience that. And yeah, it's all there and working properly.
And so is this primarily a gamepad game, or do you also have integrations with like steering wheel peripherals?
No, we support over, Project Cars has always said it's one of the most technically advanced games out there. And, you know, VR is one part of that. The game also runs at 12K as well. It supports second screen apps as well. I think there's over 15 different apps that people have made out there for the game. And we also support over 40 different wheels from all the major manufacturers as well. So including like the very latest ones as well. So, the racing genre has always been more akin to peripherals, you know, whether it's seats or wheels or headsets or apparel, you know. So I think, you know, VR is like the last step of that where you actually have a helmet. So yeah, if you've got a wheel at home, it'll work with Project Cars.
And have you also been doing some like 4D effects, like a chair where you're moving around? Maybe talk a bit about that.
So actually, dating all the way back to GTR, we've had a very good working relationship with manufacturers of motion platforms. And particularly originally, it was with a company called D-Box. And we've supported them all the way through. And now in Project Cars, we also support other motion platform manufacturers. But it is an incredible experience when you do this in VR and you're in a motion platform and you have all those actual physical hints as well of what the car is doing. So we can simulate exactly what happens to it, because we have this detailed simulation already of what the suspension of your car is doing and the tires. So when we hook that up with a motion platform, you actually get to experience how the car would move if you were sitting in the real one, because we feed what's happening in the physics engine with the suspension into the actuators of the motion platform. So they recreate the exact motion that your car would be doing if you were out on the real racetrack. So yeah, it's a great experience. And if you do that with a steering wheel and VR, it's just mind-blowing experience.
And finally, what do you see as kind of the ultimate potential of virtual reality and what it might be able to enable?
I mean, it's a broad question, isn't it? I mean, it's been coming for lots of years. You know, I remember Lawnmower Man, you know, for example. I remember my lecturers back at school university who were like talking about VR back in the day. And then finally, with Oculus Rift kind of announcing when they did, to where we are now, it's been a considerable amount of time too, you know. So for me, like personally, the possibilities are endless for like this stuff, you know. If you imagine Second Life, for example, in VR, like you can imagine people just living their entire lives in there, potentially, like going to the virtual Domino's and having it arrive at your door and things like that. Imagine Facebook in VR, like be able to do that. We're talking about PlayStation Home. I used to work at Sony and like worked on PlayStation Home. Like PlayStation Home is a virtual space that you live in and you have your own apartment, invite your avatar friends to come over and things like that, and fill your house with your own collectibles, things like that. You know, people could happily live in VR, I'm sure. You know, we're only the first generation of games, you know, currently, but you know, if you look back on previous generations of platforms like PlayStation 1, 2, 3, the quality of games and the added immersion and taking advantage of the hardware and things like that only gets better over time. So I think over time we're going to see some brilliant things that happen in VR that we're only scratching the surface of here.
What we've done here with Project Cars, the way I look at it, is that it's sort of like we're setting foot on the shores of a new continent of discovery and possibilities of what can be done. Even with this current generation of VR hardware, we are going to be on a very steep upslope of just new things that we're going to, we can do that. I didn't even think of that, because we're so set in a mindset of having to be creative within the context of what you can do on a flat screen that it's just going to take time to break out of that. So initially I see a bit of a holdback on getting to the full potential of just this generation of VR being, you know, in the minds of the designers and trying to think from a whole new clean slate. It's also a good thing, though, that people temper their expectations of this generation and the next few generations of VR, because certain experiences are going to work really well initially. Others are not going to be what people expect them to be. We're a while away before you are going to have the very basic sensation of walking through a field of long grass and feeling it against your legs and picking up all the tiny details and that. But it will eventually get there. It's the logical conclusion of the technology of where it's going. And that's not a negative thing. It is, if it was just suddenly like that, I don't think most people's psyches would be able to handle it. We'd just all be like lost somewhere. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing that we have that, and that we're going to have this upward curve of as we go through the various generations of VR. But it's hugely potential for things like in tourism, for example. I mean, just imagine you can just go to, like, you know, visit any museum around the world without actually going there, with the advent of photogrammetry and the details that they can do in that, where they can capture historical objects that are going to be lost to us in time. And you'd be able to just have those there and walk around them as if they were here in front of you, and see all the little detail and all that recreation of that. On a more personal level for people, there's going to be things like capturing photos where you actually capture a full, like the person is sitting over there, or a short video clip that is a full 360 3D. There are going to be some interesting social fallout from that. For example, if you consider what it's going to be like to have a conversation again with somebody who has passed away already, that was very close to you, or how are people going to handle that? So there is a lot of things we don't know how it's going to work for people, but it's exciting. It's something that is unlike anything else we've experienced, and for us to be the generation to be the pioneers into this, I think is absolutely incredible.
Awesome. Anything else that's left unsaid that you guys would like to say?
No, just look out for the game when it comes out March 28th, and soon after, all the versions of the Oculus version will be upgraded to the Game of the Year edition when that comes out as well.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come sit with us. Enjoyed it.
And thank you for listening. If you'd like to support the Voices of VR podcast, then please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/voicesofvr.